Hello, I'm Linor Moudou. Welcome to Health Chat. On the program today, we will look at the toxicity of some beauty products and personal hygiene products we use every day and how to protect yourself. Our guest is journalist and award-winning author Christina Marusic. But first, Africa is hosting its first ever summit on climate change this week. The World Health Organization says climate change is expected to cause approximately 250,000 additional deaths per year from malnutrition, malaria, diarrhea, and heat stress between 2030 and 2050. And people most at risk include populations in low and middle income countries, children, older populations, and those with underlying health conditions, with severe implications for women and girls' sexual reproductive health and rights. We start in Rwanda, where reporter David Mutabazi highlights some challenges faced by the country, a story narrated by Grace Oyenubi.
Rwanda is experiencing the impact of climate change. Official data reveal that floods, increase in temperature, and landslides are major challenges in the small landlocked country. There are many consequences, and the health impact is undeniable. Dr. Amil Nzayizenga is a health practitioner at the Kibagabaga Hospital in Kigali.
As a medical doctor, I believe that climate change plays a big role in affecting humans' daily lives. I can explain it this way, with a recent example of the tragedies we faced as Rwandans a few months ago, whereby the citizens of Rusizi and Rutsiro districts were hit by severe flood disasters. The calamities claimed a lot of lives, and it was all a result of climate change and global warming. Many people, especially those with asthma problems, are badly affected by winter season, more than it is normally.
Experts say nature as well as human activities are to blame for climate change. They say natural processes such as volcanic eruptions have affected the Earth's climate, and with industrialization, human activities have released large amounts of carbon dioxide and other substances into the atmosphere, which has changed the Earth's climate.
Before, here in Rwanda, during the summertime, the highest temperature we're used to have been 31 degrees Celsius at maximum. But today, there's an increase of 1.8 degrees Celsius, whereby now we reach 32 or even 33 degrees Celsius in warm season. The more humankind gets developed and civilized in terms of innovation in different sectors, people have found themselves in some activities such as deforestation, which finally led to climate change problems, not only here in Rwanda, but even everywhere else around the world.
Rwanda has taken some steps to address the impact of climate change, including setting up the Green Climate Fund and supporting innovations in health and other sectors.
And world leaders are gathered in Nairobi, Kenya, where they are articulating what a warming planet means to them and what they need to fight it. Kevin Gallagher, professor of Boston University's School of Global Studies, who spoke on various panels at the Climate Change Summit, tells VOA's Carol Van Dam that he and other authors of a new working paper have found that due to multiple external shocks after the COVID-19 pandemic started, sub-Saharan countries in particular need huge debt relief in order to meet the Paris Agreement climate targets. Take a listen.
The inconvenient truth is that it's going to be really difficult for them to do that because of the international economic environment that they're in at this particular moment in time. Right now, according to other estimates, African countries need to mobilize about 10% of GDP a year to respond to climate shocks like the floods in Nairobi and in Nigeria and in Durban earlier this year, or the droughts that are plaguing a lot of the countries in the region and making it difficult for them to export. They need to be able to finance buffers and climate resilient agriculture and so forth. And they also need to finance transitioning into a low carbon and more resilient, socially responsible and inclusive economic growth path. And the countries just don't have the financing there. They really need it from the international community.
getting to that point, how much should multilateral banks provide in debt relief to sub-Saharan countries in particular to give them that fiscal space that you talk about that they need to achieve for reaching those Paris Agreement commitments?
Yeah, we estimate that only 10 countries in the entire continent have the foreign borrowing space that would allow them to finance their climate finance needs on an annual basis. So we call on the international economic architecture to do three things. Number one, as you alluded to earlier, provide more liquidity. A lot of these countries need short-term finance to just keep things going. That means enlarging the International Monetary Fund, which is on the agenda this year. That means replenishing some of the special windows for African countries within the International Monetary Fund, like the Poverty Relief and Growth Trust and the Resilience and Sustainability Facility. In addition to that, we need the multilateral development banks, and this is on the agenda this year, to expand the level of capital that they have and to use more with the capital that they currently have. Many countries are going to need debt relief.
But when you talk about these multilateral banks and this kind of debt relief, you're talking really big numbers. If I'm not mistaken, you were saying somewhere in the neighborhood of between $13.4 billion and $34.5 billion. Do you think that that is going to be realistic?
Yeah, so African countries have had the largest increase in the amount of debt distress since COVID started and the highest levels. Their debt has tripled to $539 billion. The biggest place that they owe that money to are multilateral development banks like the World Bank and the African Development Bank. Second are private bondholders like PIMCO and Standard Chartered. Third are Chinese banks. And fourth are Paris Club governments like the United States or France. There is a framework in place at the G20, which is limbering along, not very well, but it does engage the private bondholders, the Chinese, and Paris Club countries. That needs reform. But the MDBs have been exempted, and we call on the MDBs to play their role. Depending upon the kind of country, yeah, it could be upwards of more than $20 billion of relief that they'd have to provide. And they'd have to do it in a very cautious manner, because we really need the MDBs now more than ever in the region. They can't just write off the debt like the Paris Club can, like China can, and like private bondholders should. They need to preserve their credit rating so they can continue to lend.
That's Kevin Gallagher, professor at Boston University's School of Global Studies and director of the university's Global Development Policy Center. Get this, every day women worldwide use beauty and hygiene products that contain natural ingredients for some and artificial ingredients for others. Data show that black women alone purchase $7.5 billion of beauty products each year, and observers say some of those products might be impacting their health. One of them is Christina Marusik, award-winning journalist of environmental health sciences and author of the new book, A New War on Cancer, The Unlikely Heroes Revolutionizing Prevention. Christina Marusik, thank you so much. Thank you for joining us on Health Chat today.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
So, as I mentioned earlier, women use beauty and hygiene products every day. It's part of the routine. But one thing that many women do not think about is what's in the product. What is your take?
So there are a lot of chemicals that show up in beauty products that can cause health problems, including raising our cancer risk. And it can be tricky to memorize them all and look for them on ingredient lists. So it's a problem that we're not able to just go to the store and buy something and know that it's safe. So some countries do a better job than others at regulating these chemicals in cosmetics. But for many of us in the United States and in other parts of the world, we might not be aware that there can be harmful ingredients in the products we use every day.
So to what extent is there research, or is it possible to connect toxic ingredients to a woman's health problem, maybe a woman developing cancer, how does one make that connection?
A recent study from the National Institutes of Health in the United States found that women who used hair straighteners more than four times a year were more than twice as likely to develop uterine cancer as women who didn't use these products. And research has also shown that beauty products that are typically marketed to women of color, and especially to Black women, like hair relaxers and straighteners and also skin lightening products, tend to have more chemicals that can raise cancer risk than products that are marketed to white women.
Why so?
That's a great question. So the list of harmful chemicals in beauty products is pretty long, but a couple of things that tend to show up frequently are things like heavy metals, formaldehyde, phthalates, asbestos, parabens, hydroquinone, and polyethylene glycol. And some of these are kind of key ingredients in things like hair straighteners and hair relaxers. So hair relaxers often contain parabens, BPA, heavy metals, and formaldehyde. And skin lighteners often contain chemicals like hydroquinone, which is linked to skin cancer, and mercury, which is linked to damage to the nervous system, kidneys and liver, and damage to the immune system. And the reason these chemicals are in these products is because they make them more effective. So they make the product better at relaxing our hair. Some chemicals like phthalates are added to fragrance that's added to skin products and hair products to make the fragrance last longer. But the reasons these products are specifically marketed to women of color and Black women stem from historic racism. So if you think about historically white colonizers and enslavers used real or perceived racial differences, like differences in hair texture and differences in skin color, to treat women of color and Black women especially as less than human. And so it became a survival adaptation in these communities to strive toward white beauty standards. So having straighter hair and having lighter skin might make you safer. And so the use of these products is sometimes considered a lingering effect of that historic systemic racism. So a lot of people feel that, you know, to address these problems with beauty products, we also need to address some of these systems that are still in place.
So if we were to look at a different angle, for example, when you talk about hair straightener, could it be perhaps because the hair is coarse, so the chemicals has to be stronger? Some people might argue that.
Right. So I don't know that we've had a lot of luck developing hair straighteners that are safer without the use of some of these harsh and dangerous chemicals. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, they're, for the most part, they're added because they help with the product's effectiveness.
Yes.
But there are brands that are thriving to create safer alternatives. So we're seeing more and more alternatives come out that, you know, are free of chemicals that could harm our health risk.
So the more research and the more time there is, there are healthier solutions out there.
That's right, and especially for products you use at home, there are much safer options, and you know, you have a little more control over that than something that's getting put on your hair. If you're going to a salon,
yeah,
you can ask someone at a salon, you know, what they're using, and you can look at ingredient lists, but it's a little easier to manage at home. There's a really great website called Black and Green that sells all non-toxic beauty products that are created by Black-owned businesses, and they're free of a long list of toxic ingredients. There's also, there are some online apps called Made Safe that certifies products as being non-toxic. There's a browser extension called Clearia, and there's an app called the Healthy Living app, and those all can help people find products that are free of toxic chemicals and chemicals that can raise their cancer risk.
So you wrote the book, A New War on Cancer, The Unlikely Heroes Revolutionizing Prevention. What prompted you to write the book?
My younger sister was diagnosed with thyroid cancer when she was 25 years old, and we're close in age. I was 27 at the time, and that's very young for a cancer diagnosis. And at the time, her doctors told us that thyroid cancer typically runs in families, but no one else in our family had ever had it. So they said, you know, maybe she was exposed to something in the environment, something in her personal care products that could have elevated her cancer risk, but they really didn't have much more information to provide us. And when we tried to research that on our own, we just had a hard time finding much more information about that. And I'm also an investigative journalist, and I wrote a series of stories about cancer in the environment and learned some things that were really shocking to me after my sister's experience. And I should say that my sister is doing fine today. Great. She had surgery and treatment, and she is healthy and happy today, and I'm so grateful for that. But as a reporter, I learned that rates of cancer in children and young adults like my sister have been steadily rising globally since the 1970s when we started tracking this data. And researchers aren't exactly sure why this is happening, but a lot of environmental health experts believe that it's because we are increasingly exposed to cancer-causing chemicals in our everyday lives. And so the book is really an exploration of why that's happening, who's working to keep us safe, and what we can all do to help pitch in.
And I wanted you to speak a little more on the environmental health and some of the toxicity that we breathe every day after we take a short break. But before that, what would you say is the most critical ingredient? What ingredients would you say are the most toxic to look for when we buy beauty products? I know there is a long list of products, as you mentioned, but if you were to share like 3, 4, 5 products, what would you say?
So the ones I really try to avoid are formaldehyde, phthalates, asbestos, parabens, hydroquinone, and polyethylene glycol. And hydroquinone is a really common ingredient in skin lighteners. And so generally, if you're not using skin lighteners, that one is easier to avoid, but that one is linked to skin cancer. And, you know, when we're using products that contain these chemicals, we're inhaling them, you know, potentially in the air, if it's something like a hairspray or something that gets into the air. And we also absorb chemicals through our skin. So I also really think about prioritizing things that I know I might breathe in, like a spray. I think it's important to check ingredient lists on those.
Okay.
And anything that I'm going to rub on my skin that's going to stay there for a while. So a moisturizer, you know, soap is washing off pretty quickly. A moisturizer, makeup, something that's going to stay on your skin for a long time. I think it's important to prioritize avoiding these harmful ingredients there.
Okay, Christina, and we'll continue this discussion after a short break. You are listening to Health Chat on Voice of America. It's time for a short break. When we return, we'll have more on the dangers of some beauty and hygiene products that we use with award-winning journalist and author Christina Marusik. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Health Chat. If you are just joining us, we are discussing the dangers of some beauty products. On the phone is Christina Marusik, award-winning journalist and environmental health sciences and author of the new book, A New War on Cancer, The Unlikely Heroes Revolutionizing Prevention. So, Christina, what are some of the common household items that include cancer-causing chemicals such as PFAS or forever chemicals. You mentioned them earlier.
Yes, PFAS, the acronym is PFAS, and that stands for per- and polyfluoroalkyl substances, which is a mouthful, so people usually use the acronym. There are these chemicals that are used to make all kinds of stuff stain-resistant and waterproof and non-stick. And they're sometimes called forever chemicals because they don't break down naturally. So they can build up inside of our bodies and in soil and in water and in animals and the food chain and cause health problems, including cancer. And unfortunately, these chemicals are really common. So some places we find them in our homes are in our nonstick cookware, nonstick pots and pans. They're in anything that's says it's going to make something stain-proof, like a spray that you put on your couch or on your rug, and almost anything that's advertised as waterproof contains PFAS. So these chemicals have been found in things like sports bras, contact lenses, and food wrappers. And then they're also in some of our personal care products like shampoo, dental floss, nail polish, and even eye makeup. And it's hard to know exactly where they might turn up because they're not always included in ingredient lists, unfortunately. Some states in the U.S. have started banning these chemicals in consumer products, and a lot of researchers who study these chemicals are calling for a global ban on all non-essential uses because it's becoming clear that, you know, these chemicals are everywhere. Most people have some of these chemicals in their bodies, and they've also been detected in things like breast milk and umbilical cords, which is a little upsetting and scary. So some ways you can avoid these chemicals in your house is don't use any spray-on products that promise to make things waterproof or stain-proof, like Scotchgard is an example. Avoid using Glide brand dental floss. That dental floss is coated in PFAS. Microwave popcorn bags, the inside of microwave popcorn bags is coated with PFAS. And if you're going to use nonstick cookware, throw it away if it's scratched or damaged and once it's old. And if you have the option to switch to cast iron or stainless steel, it's a good idea to avoid nonstick cookware too.
It's very scary to hear because all the products you just listed, it's every day. We use it every day. You talk about contact lenses. I mean, this is something many people use. And how do we become better informed, better aware?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's not really fair to ask individual people to know all of this and to research all of this and change their habits. So ultimately, I think we need better regulations that would protect everyone from these chemicals. And I agree with the scientists who have called for a ban on these chemicals where they're not essential. I think that, you know, the best thing we could do is reduce the number of these that are in all of our household products. But in the meantime, for individual people, I think it's really important to know that, you know, it's impossible to totally avoid these harmful chemicals. So it's not about trying to be perfect and, you know, avoid every single thing that might have a harmful chemical. It's more about looking at some places where you can make changes that are easy in your life to reduce your overall exposure. So things like, you know, if you're someone who loves popcorn and you eat microwave popcorn a couple times a week, just switching to using an air popper is a great way to reduce your exposure. And same thing with the nonstick cookware. If you can just swap out your cookware for a safer alternative, that can help reduce your exposure over time. We also know that these chemicals, PFAS, are used in a lot of food packaging and to-go packaging. And studies have shown that people who cook and eat at home more often than they eat takeout have lower levels of PFAS in their bodies, which suggests you know, that they're getting transferred from food packaging into our bodies. So that's something we already know is healthier for us generally, right? So to the extent that you can buy food and cook at home, you can also avoid exposure to PFAS in food packaging. But again, you know, we really need to call on our regulators to do a better job of regulating these chemicals so that everyone is safer from them to begin with.
Regulation is definitely a big issue because you write in your book, while around 80,000 chemicals are used in products sold to American consumers, for example, fewer than 1% have ever been tested for toxicity or safety. That's incredible.
Yeah, it's really shocking to learn. I think most people kind of assume that if a product is available to buy in a store, it's been tested for safety. But unfortunately, that's just not how it works, particularly in the United States. And I also learned writing the book that more than 80 other countries have enacted more stringent regulations on chemicals in cosmetics than the United States. One example is the European Union, and the EU has banned or restricted more than 2,000 chemicals in cosmetics, but the United States has only banned or restricted 9 chemicals in cosmetics. So there's a pretty huge difference in the way these things are regulated in different parts of the world.
So what this tells me is perhaps cosmetics bought in Europe somewhere is safer than cosmetics bought in America?
That's generally probably true, yes. And there are some state changes coming in the United States that could help. So a few years ago, California passed a ban on 24 harmful chemicals, including stuff like mercury, formaldehyde, phthalates, parabens, and PFAS in cosmetics that are sold in the state of California. That won't go into effect in 2025, but usually it's really difficult for manufacturers to make one set of a product to sell in California and then a different set to sell everywhere else. So they just end up making their formula safer for everyone because it's easier than trying to, you know, separate what they do in one state. So state laws like that often end up protecting the rest of us and kind of standing in for federal laws. So this is also worth doing, you know, advocacy work at the state level when it comes to these regulations.
One thing that I've noticed is there is this big movement about vegan cosmetics and organic cosmetics with organic ingredients. So and that's very popular here in the United States. So maybe that's a good alternative for women.
Yes. So when you have the ability to eat organic food and buy products made with organic ingredients, that's always a good idea because that helps protect you from exposure to pesticides. And a lot of pesticides, especially those used in the United States, are linked to health problems, including elevated cancer risk. That's another area where many pesticides that have been banned in other parts of the world are still permitted in the United States. Okay. So if you're buying a product made with organic ingredients or you're buying organic foods, that can help you avoid exposure to those pesticides. But there's also some greenwashing that goes on with cosmetics. So sometimes something that's marketed as vegan and organic could still contain some of these other harmful ingredients. And okay. I mentioned it's tricky to read ingredient lists. Another reason for that is that there are some common ingredients in hair products, for example, that can combine to release formaldehyde when they're heated. And so the ingredient list won't say formaldehyde, but if you apply it to your hair and you do some heat styling with a blow dryer or a curling iron or a flat iron, you could be releasing formaldehyde that you're then inhaling. So okay. I find it easiest to go into one of those like third-party verification things that I mentioned and just type in, you know, mascara or lotion. And I personally really like the Healthy Living app by the Environmental Working Group. And then they have a certification program that says this product is free from this long list of harmful chemicals.
Okay, Christina, we have to leave it there. Thank you so much. That was a very, very good information you shared with us. Thank you so much, Christina Marusik. Christina Marusik is a journalist at Environmental Health Science and author of the book, A New War on Cancer, the Unlikely Heroes Revolutionizing Prevention. I can say that. Thank you all for joining us today, and special thanks to all our affiliate stations. I'm your host, Lenore Moudou, with producer Nicole Peters. Until next time, take care, stay safe, and strive to make every day a healthy day.